Once again for Insight with Jack Stogler on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. Insight with Jack Stogler is being brought to you by the community-minded sponsors you're going to hear during today's broadcast. Without further ado, here's your host, Mr. Jack Stogler.
Welcome to Insight with Jack Stogler, except Jack Stogler is not here tonight. So I'll be taking care of things, and we'll be talking with Donna Post. She is a Republican candidate for judge here in Mercer County. What, Ms. Post, what is the name of the court that you're running for the judge?
That would be the Mercer County Common Pleas Court General and Domestic Relations Division.
That's too many words, so we'll call it Common Pleas.
All right, then.
Okay. So let's just start off with telling us who you are, where you're from, tell us about your family, your education, that type of thing. Give us a general kind of background, and we'll just let you go ahead and explain.
All right. Well, I'm from right down the road, a little piece there on a dairy farm outside of Wendelene. That's where I was born and raised. I still live there on the home place, although we don't have cows anymore. What we have is some free-range bunnies and some free-range cats that we have. a lot of soybeans out there once in a while during the year.
Yeah.
But that's where I was born and raised. In regards to education, I went to St. Henry High School, graduated from there. From there, I went to Wright State out here at the Lake Campus, although It used to be called the Western Ohio Branch Campus when I was going a few years ago.
Yep.
And I used to be able to, then I'd help milk and help feed in the morning, and then I'd go off to school in the afternoon and the evening. Yeah. So that worked out pretty good for me. So then from there, I went down to Dayton to finish up. And
at Wright State in Dayton? Or
okay. Right, mm-hmm. At Wright State in Dayton. Mm-hmm. Got a Bachelor of Arts degree in history, which then was because they didn't have a pre-law program, mm-hmm. which is what I was interested in. They said history is the way to go. And I always liked that topic, so that worked out fine for me. Mm-hmm. But when I graduated from Wright State in Dayton, there were three history majors who were constantly together in our classes. And once in a while, they'd throw in some people who wanted to be teachers or something or who needed general electives.
Yeah.
But there were three of us, so you can tell it was a very popular subject for that. So from there, then, I went to Ohio Northern in Ada, mm-hmm. which is, you know, north.
Yes.
And so that was just kind of down the road as
well. Yeah, they have a... especially for that size of school, they have an extremely good law and an extremely good pharmacy program.
They're known for.
Yep.
That's what they're known for. So great education there. And then, of course, after that, went down to Columbus, passed the bar, and off I was going. Came back to Salina and opened a private law practice. And then I've always practiced as a solo attorney in my own office and mm-hmm. in various locations in Salina. Been doing that for 35 years. And six of those years I spent as magistrate for the probate juvenile court when Mary Pat Zitter was the judge of mm-hmm. that court.
Yep.
So
you're practically neighbors out there.
Pretty much. Not too far away.
Not too far.
That's right. I knew that, you know, sometimes I could make it to work faster than she could. I knew how bad her road must be as compared to, you know, Post Road out there.
Yeah.
You know, so I would think how much more snow she must have gotten being that further west. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we've gotten that, and you say you've been an attorney in Salina for
35 years.
Okay.
Right.
And do you have a specialty or kind of, is it?
More or less general practice, but mm-hmm. Sometimes of the year you find yourself doing more things than others.
Mm-hmm.
I have practiced in the what they call the Domestic Relations Division of the Common Pleas Court, and that has to do with divorce and with dissolutions and mm-hmm. custody cases, child support, and things like that, as well as the Criminal Division. I don't prosecute, but what I do is to defend people, so that's my position as being in the Criminal Division of the Common Pleas Court,
mm-hmm.
And of course civil cases, whether it be here or in surrounding counties for things like personal injury or foreclosures or this, that, and the other that people need money judgments or need defense or need to start a case in order to seek some justice.
So it sounds like you've had some experience in about every kind of realm there is of courts.
Pretty much. Yeah. I try to get involved in everything. What you find is that when you're representing a person, sometimes their life trips into the other courts. If you have them in the common pleas court, they all might also get a traffic ticket and be over at the municipal court. Or they may have a child who gets a traffic ticket and is over at the juvenile court. So people in Mercer County are, I think, like everybody else, their lives just get interrupted by this, that, and the other, and they find themselves going from one spot to the other. We are lucky, though, in our county that the courts are right down the hall from each other or they're across the street, unlike some counties where you have to go from block to block in order to find the courts.
Yeah, or even in some places it's in a completely different part of town. They try to keep a lot of the courts downtown at the courthouse, but some places sometimes it just has to get moved to a different building somewhere where they've been able to find some room since they outgrew the courthouse.
Or they're on the other side of town, like you said, Allen County. I can remember the juvenile court being on the other side of town. Then if you needed to be there that day and go to the municipal court, you had to hop in the car and go for a trip and make it through a lot of stoplights before you got there.
Yeah, there are a lot of stoplights there. So, all right, we've kind of gotten to know Donna Post a little bit. So let's take a break and we'll come back and get into some of the serious issues about what's why she wants to be a judge here in Mercer County. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Brick Street Tavern has some great nightly specials for you. On Tuesdays, you can get our awesome boneless wings for just 75 cents each and a domestic draft for only $1.50. Wednesday night, you can get our delicious grilled or spicy chicken salad for just $6. And Thursdays, it's our crispy chicken wrap with fries for only $6.50. On Friday and Saturday evenings, you can get a sirloin steak for $14.99 or a four-piece chicken dinner for $8.99. And both include our salad bar, your choice of potatoes, and a dinner roll. Be sure to stop in at any time and try a slice of our delicious homemade pie. For great home cooking, stop in and see us at Brick Street Tavern.
Do you want to work somewhere that is more than a workplace? Look no further than Cooper Farms, where their competitive pay and superb workforce will make you feel like a part of the family from day one. Cooper Farms has locations in Van Wert, Paulding, and Mercer counties, and positions are open for all work styles. Whether you need a full-time job with competitive pay and excellent benefits, or a flexible part-time position that allows you to set your own hours, Cooper Farms is the place for you to pursue your next career. Go to CooperFarmsJobs.com to join us today and find a new job. Cooper Farms, more than a workplace.
Hello, I'm Kenny Canote from K&L Tractor Sales, Fort Recovery, Ohio. It has been said time and time again, you get what you pay for. In the case of Simplicity Lawn and Garden Tractors, you get even more. Exclusive features like free-floating mower decks for a perfectly manicured cut, full-width rollers for a beautifully striped lawn, suspension comfort system for a smooth ride, and automatic control traction for the best traction system in industry. So do you want to settle for getting what you pay for or getting more? Visit K&L Tractor Sales to see the exclusive features of a Simplicity.
The Fort Recovery High School Scholastic Bowl is hosting a community trivia night on Friday, April 22nd at the Commons at the high school. Doors open at 6 with a trivia competition starting at 6:30. Members of the public are invited to participate, and you can have 2 to 6 players on each team, and the cost is $40 per team, and there will be prizes for the top teams. Your team can be family members, coworkers, friends, a group of students, anybody you want to grab to help make your team better. For questions or to get your entry form, just email weigelm@fortrecoveryschools.org. The public is invited to come at no charge, and there will be a 50-50 drawing and snacks will be available. Be sure to get entered now for the community trivia night coming up on Friday, April 22nd at the High School Commons. Doors open at 6. Entry forms available by emailing weigelm@fortrecoveryschools.org. Proceeds will be used for scholarships for high school seniors.
Welcome back to Insight. Lovely Wednesday night. I think there's supposed to be some rain tonight, but we've gotten away with a pretty good day today and beautiful weather. We're here talking with Donna Post. She's a Republican candidate for the Mercer County Common Pleas Court Judge. And so who is the current judge? Come and please.
That would be Judge Jeffrey Ingram.
Okay. And he is not running?
Yeah. At this time, he is, at the end of this year, aging out because of he's coming to the age of 70 and past, and at that point, they won't allow them to run again for that office.
Okay. So, even though, of course, everybody's heard of most of the judges around here, and I don't think anybody has anything bad to say about him, except maybe some of the people he had in front of him. But since he can't run again, we're going to get a new one and get new blood and try something different. So what does the Common Pleas Court do? What kind of cases, what kind of things does that court do?
Well, they do a variety of different cases. They do family law cases, which would include custody matters and support matters, as well as terminating marriages. They also do the criminal docket, which would include everything from assaults on up. And oftentimes you see in the paper drug cases and so forth that are felonies. Those are the kind of cases that the Common Pleas Court deals with as well. And in regards to civil cases, when it's over a certain amount of money, for example, if the higher, the more expensive, I guess, cases of damages and so forth from personal injury, from civil suits on this, that, and the other, those kind of courts are into the Common Pleas Court. Whereas your municipal court deals with small claims matters of up to $6,000 or mm-hmm. municipal court level up to $10,000 or so, the Common Pleas Court exceeds that. So things get not only more expensive, but it takes a lot more evidence. It takes a lot more time to get those issues resolved. And sometimes people's tempers flare. And sometimes, they have lots of opinions about things. But those are all held in our Common Pleas Court, as well as civil protection orders are held as well, and emergency hearings on certain orders, such as the CPOs, and as well as through the custody cases, mm-hmm. injunctions, anything else in regards to anything that's not probate and not anything that needs to be dealt with as the smaller traffic cases do in the juvenile and the municipal court. So you're looking at felony cases such as felony OVIs. Those are also dealt with through the Common Pleas Court.
Are most or all OVIs, are they always, sometimes, or occasionally felonies?
Occasionally. There has to be multiple OVIs to be charged as a felony.
Okay. For example, I was thinking that, I hope I never get to find out firsthand. But
right. You don't want to be there. Yeah, that's for sure.
And you said protection orders.
Right.
So the judge, right for now, Judge Ingram would be the person who would issue protection orders for someone?
For civil protection orders, and that generally, when you think back to cases, popular cases, if you look at civil protection orders, that used to be like, for example, most popular one being the one associated with the O.J. Simpson case of years and years ago.
Yeah.
And after that, the law changed, and it became, I think, easier to obtain in order to protect victims in civil matters, mm-hmm. because oftentimes it takes a little bit of time for the criminal justice system to kick in with the police reports and the victims having to make statements and the evidence that's needed. In the meantime, those victims need to be protected, and civil protection orders will do that, and so that the officers and so forth have some power in order to enforce that and to protect people. So that's one of the things that's oftentimes is a spur of the moment thing, and that court has to just drop everything and hear some of those cases as
right.
well.
Yeah. So, you know, you're watching TV and you see this protection order, that protection order. Somebody calls somebody a judge in the middle of the night and tries to get something. Is that something that's common? Is that something that happens in Ohio? Is that something that obviously you're not the judge, so you don't know all the things, but you probably at least know of some of the protection orders and how they were done. Is that something that that you have to have somebody needs to come in front of the judge and talk about, or can it just be done pretty quickly if necessary?
I think oftentimes you'll see that those happen early in the day because, like you said, sometimes things happen in the middle of the night, and you'll see that these civil protection orders are on the docket, and they will move everything in order to hear those cases because they really do need to give emergency orders in order to make sure somebody doesn't get hurt, make sure somebody goes to jail in order not to hurt somebody else, to make sure people don't flee. With a child or do anything that, you know, they shouldn't be doing. So that you'll see that they have to come forth in the court pretty quickly.
So it would be something that would at least come before the judge before it's issued.
Right. And then he or she's going to have some staff there in order because there's lots of paperwork with those kind of things.
Yeah, I can't imagine that would be just something pretty easy and quick and just nonchalant and run of the mill. So as far as, you know, some of the other things that come up there, are most of the cases more or less cut and dried, or is it something that is going to take, obviously some of them are going to be pretty complicated, even in that type of court, if it's not even, you know, murder or something like that. But are most of those long trials? Are they just kind of
you're in
and you're out, or it depends completely on what it is?
Right. It really depends on what it is. You'll see that sometimes you'll see in the media, whether it's the paper or whether it's on radio, you hear reports of some pretty awesome trials that may have been a civil matter, or you hear some pretty scary things on the criminal docket. But by the time it's been to trial stage, it's probably been before the court for maybe 6 months already. And what you see is the culmination of a lot of people who have really worked a lot on those cases. Everything from, it goes from the initial complaints through the police department, through the prosecutor's office, through the defense attorneys who had to go out to the jail to interview people and meet their clients for the first time. And you see a lot of witnesses who've been subpoenaed, and there's a lot of work that goes into those. But for many cases, such as on the family law docket, a lot of that preparation work is done in attorneys' offices, and there's lots of pretrials that you never see in public because that's basically the people themselves coming to court and, you know, sitting there for an hour during a pretrial and trying to get issues resolved. And so you may do that for several months, and then you finally culminate in having a trial. But it's not going to be a jury trial, which oftentimes are sensationalized, and you know, people show up for that who normally have a job or something elsewhere and have no idea what it is they're going to be exposed to as part of the jury. So it's also a learning process, I think, for the public as well. But usually things are a little bit quieter than, you know, some of the sensationalized jury trials that you see in the national news and so forth. Yeah. You see jury trials, but there's some basic issues that have to be resolved, and those are done locally.
So have you been a defense attorney at a number of things in this particular court?
Oh, yes. I've had criminal trials where I've had to defend people, you know, whether it's drug cases or any other cases for people as well. So we've had jury trials with that. Oftentimes, you just can't avoid them because of the issues that are not cut and dried. You know, there's factual issues that people have to hear, and then they have to decide, is that really a violation or is that not a violation? Does that apply to this person? Does it not? So a lot of it really rests back on the people who are on the jury as to what their impressions are and their perspective is. So that gets to be quite interesting.
Yeah. So probably should, I don't know the best way to ask this, but I'll just ask it. And if you want to think about it a little bit and answer it after the next commercial break, we can move on to something else. But as far as you being a defense attorney, do you think that would have any bearing on how you might rule on a particular case?
I don't think so. The one thing is that we all take positions, whether you're in civil or whether you're in criminal. So sometimes you're on the plaintiff's side, sometimes you're on the defendant's side. And the nice thing about it is after 35 years, I can look at that in a kind of a whole rounded perspective from the whole picture. And having been a magistrate and sat on the bench over at the juvenile probate court and listened to trials and conducted trials, and listen to evidence and so forth, it sure gives you a different perspective as to that. So that whole idea of, well, I'll be on this side or I'll be on that side, that just goes out the window.
So a defense attorney doesn't necessarily always favor the accused, and the prosecuting attorney as a judge doesn't always necessarily favor the victim,
or
the state, or whatever it might, whoever.
Right.
Yeah, so that's good. So we want to make sure we have judges that are fair and can see both sides. And if you're in the courtroom, and I'm sure just about everybody that you deal with in Mercer County, you know them pretty well anyway.
You kind of have an inkling when you hear things.
And so the other side, the other lawyer, the prosecuting attorney, whoever it might be, you know them well enough that you're gonna, you can understand their point of view, because you have to understand their point of view to counter what they're gonna say. So as long as you kind of understand both sides, you're probably gonna end up as a judge making a good call that sees both sides of an issue, because you kind of had to do that to know what this other attorney's going to say, so you know how to counter it.
Yeah, anticipate, and sometimes you've been there in that situation representing that person. You know, you can flip some of those cases and go, oh, I've been there, done that.
Yep.
You know, and you can just about anticipate what that other person's going to have to do, because the evidence has to come forth and it has to prove certain things. So you can just about anticipate that. The other thing that's nice in Mercer County that we are familiar with the attorneys of the, not only our bar, but, you know, Auglaize, Van Wert, Dark, and some of the other attorneys who come down. We see them frequently, so you kind of know their nuances and what to kind of expect with things as well. So that's kind of, it's a familiarity I think everybody in a workplace has with people they work with.
Yeah, and that's a good way to do it, too. And not only if it's attorney with another attorney, even though you're opposing in that particular case, still friends. You just work what you need to do, and when it comes to understanding, if you understand what they're gonna be talking about, if you understand their point of view and how the prosecutor has to come to it and how the defense has to come to it, that's probably what a judge is supposed to do. Is, you know, not listen to who's the best speaker, but who presented the evidence, and can you actually make a conviction or a acquittal or whatever it may be. So
right, a lot of it is not, it's not like it is on TV where you see, you know, the one actor or the one actress doing certain things or giving a Jimmy Stewart like closing or something. But what you're actually looking for is, like you said, it's the evidence. And there's certain standards of evidence. Is it clear and convincing? Is it beyond a reasonable doubt? Is it, you know, what do you have to prove? And as a judge, you're going to be looking for that.
Yep. And if I think a judge has to understand that, and I'd say 35 years in the business, you probably understand that pretty well.
You understand it. And I think, too, you know, when people are talking, you can hear from their voice and watch them, and you know who's credible and who's not credible.
Yeah.
You know, because often in these cases, people may say, oh, I'm going to drag in 25 people to testify for me. Well, if they're not all telling the truth, that probably maybe you only needed one or two. You know, so, you know, it's like when parents have their children come home and tell them this, that, or the other, you know when they're telling the truth and when they're not. So, you know, some of that is it's just human nature.
Yep. Let's take another break here. We'll come back in a little bit and we'll talk about some more potential judge stuff with Donna Post. We'll be back in just a little bit.
Klingchern & Sons Trucking Incorporated is a family-owned and operated business in Burkittsville. They have over 50 years of experience, and they pride themselves on their commitment to punctual transportation and exceptional customer service. They offer local and long-haul transportation. They have dump trucks, stone slingers, flatbeds, vans, and refrigerated trailers. They have great employment opportunities as well. Visit their website at klingchernandsons.com or call them at 937-338-5000. Call Klingchern & Sons Trucking for all your transportation needs.
Here at Hall Brothers, your local Case IH dealer, we want you to put the very best into your machine so you can get the very best out of your machine. Choose to use CNH Industrial Genuine Parts. Only CNH Industrial Genuine Parts are specifically engineered to fit and function perfectly with your Case IH equipment. They deliver the performance your business demands while giving you the durability your schedule depends on. So when you want to maximize your performance, go with the original, CNH Industrial Genuine Parts. To find CNH Industrial Genuine Parts, visit Hall Brothers in Fort Recovery.
Are you looking for great food fast? Call Miracle Lanes at 375-4274 and let them do the cooking. You want wings, but the kids want pizza? No problem. Everybody can get what they want. Wings, pizza, great sandwiches, subs, fried goodies. Just call them, then drive through and pick it up. And call Miracle Lanes to reserve your lanes for your kid's birthday party or other get-together. Just call them at 375-4274 now and get your party booked. And be sure to stop out on Fridays at lunch for their great pizza and wing buffet with salad bar. Great food and lots of fun at Miracle Lanes. Stop out or call them at 375-4274. Here are the baseball broadcasts coming up the rest of this week on Fort Recovery Radio. Tomorrow, it will be a big MAC game as our Indians will host the St. Henry Redskins. Then on Saturday, our Indians will host Lincoln View in a single game starting at 11 a.m. The weather seems to finally be cooperating, and it looks like it will be for these games. So this would be a good time to head up to the baseball field to help cheer on our Indians with two home games this weekend. But if you just can't get there in person, you can always listen live right here on Fort Recovery Radio, the home of the Indians.
Welcome back to Insight. We're talking with Donna Post. She is a Republican candidate for the judge of the Mercer County Common Pleas Court. That's all I'm going to say without all the other things at the end with the long explanation. But Common Pleas Court, we kind of got into that. What other courts are there in Mercer County? They're like traffic court kind of thing, or what other things are there, I guess?
Right. So we have the municipal court, which is in Salina, and that's with Judge Catherine Spielman. And so she hears not only traffic, but she also hears cases involving evictions, landlord-tenant, small claims cases that are civil cases, municipal court level civil cases that involve a little bit more issues and money and so forth. Mm-hmm. For example, when people don't get along and they put a fence between them and, you know, they want to charge their neighbor for it or something like that, something silly, you know, but it's not silly to them.
Right.
Additionally,
it's not murder, though.
Right, right. Well, yes, it's not at that level, no. Yeah. But then you have no contact orders that are domestic violence and so forth that she hears as well. So you have those cases for probate juveniles. So let's say juveniles that get removed from their families or for paternity cases where people aren't married and they have children and there's custody issues and support issues and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Those are heard at the probate juvenile court, and that's with Judge Matthew Gilmore. And he has a magistrate, Magistrate Richard Delsite.
So what is the role of a magistrate?
The magistrate is there to help the cases proceed, to keep things moving, because it's come to the point where sometimes the court has so much going on that if they want to get done and they want, and everybody wants their case done fast.
That's kind of in the Constitution too,
speedy trial. Justice delayed is justice denied.
Yep.
Yes. So in that position, the magistrate is there to hear cases. Let's say that the magistrate, I believe, currently hears the juvenile division cases, so anything on custody and that sort of thing for people who have not been married regarding their children, then he would hear that. And there's pre-trials and there's ex parte hearings, which is somebody comes in to file something and says, I can't get a hold of the other side, but there's a danger, there's a safety issue. Then he's got to hear those right away. So he's there. And on the same token, at the other side of the courtroom, the judge is perhaps juggling the courtroom with him because he's got to hear the probate matters that make it into court. So you have one courtroom and you have two people who are trying to get in there and and hear all the cases so that they can get things moving.
So is that the judge and the court and the magistrate that was Mary Pat Zitter, and you helped with that? Is that
right? I was the magistrate for her.
Okay,
right.
That's what I was thinking you said. I wanted to be sure that we were getting that correct. And who is that person now, that judge?
And that is Matthew Gilmore.
Judge Gilmore. Okay.
Yes.
All righty.
And then his magistrate then is Magistrate Delsite. And he hears, as I used to, hears part of the things while the judge is hearing the other part that was perhaps on the docket for that day.
Yeah.
And maybe in the courtroom. And then for if something comes up that's an emergency for that magistrate, then he has to wait his turn and then get that case into the courtroom.
Yep.
But, you know, we generally only have one courtroom for each court that we have, whether it's municipal court or for probate juvenile or for the common police court, there's one courtroom. So everybody, you know, wants to wedge their way in there.
Yes.
On certain days, it gets to be a very busy place.
Yeah, I don't have any doubt about that. So so the that's kind of what the other judges and courts do. So as far as are there certain days that each of those people gets that courtroom? Is it always a Tuesday that this person gets it and the magistrate gets it on Thursday? Or is it just, is it however they can plan it with on the docket?
Right. So in the Common Pleas Court, normally Mondays and Tuesdays was the emphasis on the family law. So the divorces, the dissolutions, the custody matters and so forth. But those cases may take, you know, part of the day or all day, and they might have to intermingle with some of the civil docket. Or if there were some criminal cases that had to be heard, then those also would be heard. But they try to emphasize one case on a couple different days. And then on Wednesdays was always the criminal docket, and then the civil cases maybe on Tuesday, and they try to catch up on Friday with a little of this and a little of that because, you know, there's sometime an overflow, so you have to just not enough time.
Yeah, so sometimes Fridays are hectic and sometimes they're not so bad.
Right. So so if you're not in the courtroom, then probably the judge is back there doing some research or writing some decisions. So that's all part of it. And in the juvenile probate court where I was, that was the basically the way that things happened. If you weren't in the courtroom, then you probably had pretrials where you had attorneys back in the office.
Mm-hmm.
Or you were doing the research or you were doing the writing of decisions and so forth. So there's always something to do.
Yeah. Now, in the common pleas court, is there such a thing as plea agreements, or is that usually in more serious matters?
Plea agreements as to criminal cases, yes, and those are worked on very hard by both the prosecution attorney and as well as the defense attorneys. And, of course, the defense attorneys have to be inquiring of their clients to see if that's something that they wish to do and what's in their best interest for those kind of agreements. And, in fact, that they be satisfied, and also that those are often used so that basically based on the evidence, it comes down to plea agreement may be a better option for people than what a jury trial would.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely, with considering what they may face, what they don't face, what the evidence truly is, and you may start with one thing and end up with something totally different. Mm-hmm. And that's hard for people to understand who are the public and are reading the paper and go, oh, why did it jump from here to here? Well, the evidence showed something different, but the general public's not going to understand
that. We've had Jeff Gray on several times, and he's alluded to that question. Why didn't you go all out? Well, we have to prove it. And if we don't prove it, then they're off completely. If we do a plea agreement, at least they're going to get something. He's looking at it from the prosecution side with his evidence. And I know he's very thorough and tries to have a open and shut case when he presents it to the prosecutor, but that isn't always the case, and it's not always Sheriff Gray. So,
you have to look at the whole picture.
Yes.
That's the whole thing.
And it has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, or you're not allowed to convict them. But, juries sometimes do that anyway, but sometimes they let them go with. So, anyway, that's enough of that stuff. But so is it easier, better, quicker for the court system to do plea agreements? Or is that just too broad a statement to
answer? I think that's probably too broad of a statement there. But yeah, it's not so much for the court system to save time or anything like that. But certainly I think it's better oftentimes for the defendants. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes it's sometimes better for the people who initially brought the case. And, you know, with the length of time, sometimes between the time that a case starts and a time gets to the court, you have to look at that, how that impacts everybody and how that impacts witnesses and whether you still have those witnesses or whether they've moved out of the area or the evidence itself looked at in a different light. So in the end, there is no happy way to say that, hey, that is a Band-Aid for everybody, but it's at least a start to, and perhaps sort of just a little option for folks. Some people like them, some people don't.
If it's two parties against each other rather than the county or something like that against an individual, if it's two parties coming together and making an agreement, that's in my head, that would be better, because those two people have actually agreed that this is how we're going to settle this.
Right,
instead
right.
of, and, but other times, you know, they're not going to agree and the court has to settle it, then somebody's not going to be happy. But, and if you do a plea agreement, nobody's going to get everything they want, I don't suppose. But they
right,
can come to some sort of compromise where everybody's at least satisfied, if not 100% satisfied.
So right. And I think in our county, we're very thorough, whether it's the prosecutor's side or the defense side, with looking at the available information we have and with looking at what people are saying, what's happening from one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas some counties you go to and you know that they'll always make a plea agreement if this is charged, or they'll always do that. And the larger places you go, the more you see that those things change. But you come back to Mercer County, and we tend to be very thorough, and I think they always have been.
That's good. That's good. Let's take another break here. We'll come back and talk a little bit more with Donna Post about her candidacy for the Common Pleas Court judge. We'll be back in just a minute or two.
Remember that scene in the Indiana Jones movie where the old knight tells him to choose wisely? Hi, I'm Connor Ramble with Fort Recovery Insurance. When it comes to insurance, choose wisely. Now, I'm not an old knight, but I do know insurance. From farms to factories to cars and ATVs, don't just spin the wheel and choose the first one that comes up. Insurance is too important not to have some local advice on what is wisest for you. FortRecoveryInsurance.com, your local agent for Ohio Mutual Insurance Group.
Do you have that one room that is too cold in the winter or too hot in the summer? Need to send air or heat to an addition, basement, or garage, but getting it there seems impossible? Introducing Mitsubishi Multi-Zone Systems, your heating and air solution for one room or independent control of every room. Oh, did I mention Mitsubishi H21 systems are ductless and can be installed almost anywhere, even the ceiling? Get a $500 instant savings discount now at Reasoner Energy. Another problem solved by Reasoner Energy. 419-678-4858.
While you're out shopping during the Fort Recovery Garage sales this weekend, stop by the Wayne Street Market for some delicious ready-to-eat specials back in their deli. Thursday, you can get their delicious smoked rib dinner for just $8. On Friday, they'll be grilling with hot dogs for $1.50 and hamburgers or brats for only $3. Saturday, be sure to stop in for their famous tenderloin dinner for just $6. Don't shop hungry during the garage sales this weekend. Just stop by the Wayne Street Market for one of their ready-to-eat specials, then get back to the bargains you'll find all around town.
Wow. Are you interested in reserving a campsite for the 2022 Win on the Wall Bash to be held August 26th and 27th in Fort Recovery? Campsites for this year will go for sale online April 30th. Non-electric sites will cost $40 for the weekend, and electric sites will cost $150. There are a limited number of campsites available, and they will sell exclusively on our website, wowraffle.com. So be sure to get yours reserved beginning April 30th. And then we'll see you in August for the 4th annual Win on the Wabash.
We're back. Insight with Donna Post. She's, again, Republican candidate for the Common Pleas Court judge. And so, Donna, what made you want to become a judge? And what kind of skill set, that type of thing, do you think you can bring to be a really good judge for Mercer County?
Well, I'd served as an attorney for a long period of time before I became a magistrate. And after I became a magistrate, I saw how the court works behind the bench. Mm-hmm. And I got over that initial wanting to help people. Just, you know, sometimes when you hear cases, you just want to go to them and say, you really need to get an attorney. Yeah. Here's what you're doing wrong. Yeah. But you can't do that as a judge. But you can have them... encourage them to go get an attorney. And sometimes you can see people who try to represent themselves or who just don't understand what's going on, even mm-hmm. when they have an attorney. You're able to address that as a judge to kind of clarify things or to give a recess or something so they can talk to counsel. You can just kind of tell that. It seemed to be a natural progression to go from a magistrate to running for judge, particularly after I saw some things that I wanted to change, but I couldn't change them as a magistrate. Mm-hmm. For example, in the Common Pleas Court, I practiced for 35 years, but there are some rules that I thought, you know, they need to kind of be updated, I think, majorly, particularly in the family law section.
Is that something a judge can do, or do you have this very rigid guidelines of things you can and cannot do, or do you have some...
You have some leeway.
Good, right. good.
And you get
together. So common sense can be used.
Exactly.
That doesn't happen much in government.
That's right. And you need to jump on that when you have the opportunity yes. before you get involved in some other area. So, and it's something you can work together with the Bar Association. When I look at some of the areas that I practice in some other courts, I think, wow, we could use some of those rules, you know, particularly involving fathers more in the lives of children and, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, maybe changing some of the standards that we've had for at least 35 years that I've known. They just need to be updated and so forth on that. So, you know, that's some of the things that you'll be able to do as judge. Also, I think in moving things along, I like to see things go, I would say, a little quicker pace and to maintain that pace because mm-hmm. as an attorney, the big thing I often hear of is, why is this not done? I've been doing this for 6 months. Are we doing another pretrial? And of course, they don't see the importance of that. Yeah. Until you get almost to the final day and suddenly it was like, oh, I should have gave that information or I should have done this or I should have done that. Well, there's reasons for pretrials, but sometimes you don't want to be accused of pretrialing something to pieces, you know.
Yeah, right.
I mean, sometimes yeah. it's just too much for people. They need to move on with things. So I think that's one of at least two areas that we could touch on. Mercer County's pretty lucky. We've got some real rock solid values in this county, and maybe that's because of the farm values of the yeah. you know, work ethic and people being honest and respectful, and we've got a good yep. community system, we've got solid churches and so forth. But when people stray from that, and that's when you end up with some issues, then those have to be addressed. And I think that basically what you'll find is that people are pretty good, and they're going to come forth to be on your juries. They're going to come forth to support programs that the court has, and currently they have drug court and things like that where families come forth and they can take some pride in the fact that their family members are getting past these drug issues. But, you know, it's a continuing effort for them. And yeah. But the drug issues themselves take a big bite out of, I think, the time for the court on criminal day, and then they kind of flow into custody issues, and it's just everywhere.
Yeah, and so, like, this Common Pleas Court would have some of the drug cases?
Oh, yeah. They have a significant portion, I think, of yeah. the criminal docket is caused by drug issues.
So, do you have, would that, as judge, would you have, or is there some way you can recommend a program for them, or some way, you know, most of the people who are accused and or convicted of drug stuff, they're not awful people. They got into a situation. Is there some way to rehab them that a judge can be involved in, can tell you have to do this or suggest? Or is that something you're not allowed to even talk about?
Well, as part of that, I think you'll see that Judge Ingram often has sentences that are reflected in the media, whether it's in the newspaper or wherever, that involve rehabilitation and involve drug court, what they call it drug court, but counseling and so forth, and helping people get back on track. And they have good probation officers that have access to a lot of different programs that they're able to use, and that's just under Ohio law that they have to look at those. And that they're available to people with drug issues. And so whomever the judge would be, that would be part of what they're considering when they look at sentencing.
Well, that's good. And now, I believe House of Hope and a couple other things like that are around the area. Is that something that the court would directly recommend to somebody, order to somebody, or just kind of...
That may be part of terms of probation. That may be part of terms of that sort of thing.
And so people, they can name specific things that they might look at, or can they order them to go to that? Or is that
the court can make specific orders, of course, but oftentimes through defense counsel and through probation officers and through counselors themselves, people find those things that they normally did not know was there, and they're able to avail themselves to that as part of their rehab.
Yeah, so it's probably best if the judge encourages them, but let the other entities like the attorney and so forth lead them to the place that's best for them.
You have to want to do that. You have to want to make a difference in your life in order to, I think, to be more effective and to try to conquer those problems.
Yeah, and part of that is admitting that it is a problem, and that's hard for a lot of people because a lot of people that are hooked on stuff refuse to believe that they're hooked on it. They can stop anytime they want.
It's a long journey for many of them.
And most of it that's addictive, they have no choice. It just takes over their lives without some help. They can't, almost nobody can get out of that by themselves. They have to have some help.
I think it's very difficult for them. Being a defense attorney and being an attorney for 35 years, I've seen how it impacts their families. I've seen people that I met early on in my career, and now they have grandkids who are involved in the court system, and you can see the paths that they have taken and see how their kids maybe fell off that path. And here we are, so they have to deal with that. So that's very difficult for families. And that's one thing in being a judge. I don't think you can ever forget that it's not just what you see in the courtroom. It's those families have to deal with that afterwards. And I think they all need to have the equal access to justice so that they know what kind of programs are out there, whether it be drug issues or other issues, and what's available in the community, because sometimes these people just don't know what's out there to help them.
Yep. And, that has to be a tough position for a judge. So, qualifications, you've been a magistrate. How did that come about, and how long ago, how far into your career were you able to become a magistrate with Mary Pat Zitter?
That happened in 2014, and I served there until early 2021. When that was her last, about last 6.5 years. So she asked me to do that. I think that by that time there were just so many cases that had come to be that it was difficult to catch up with everything and keep everything going. So she really needed two people in there. So that worked out fine. I did probate and I did juvenile cases as well, which is actually very good because there are some probate issues that come into the common pleas court, which people wouldn't expect, but not everything that's probate stays in probate court. There are some issues that according to law have to be heard in the common pleas court, so it's nice to be familiar with them. So we were able then to move the docket along and hear a lot of cases and make people feel like, hey, my case is being heard. So you didn't have to wait a year to get in. You could get in a much shorter time and get those cases heard. For a little child who's maybe 4 years old, if their case is in court for 2 years, I mean, that's half their life.
Yeah.
You know, and by the time they go to preschool, by the time they go to Head Start or whatever, they kind of figured it out. The other kids aren't going there. You know, other kids have a permanent home and they don't. Other, you know, so things have to be addressed so they can move those kids along.
Yeah. So, so you've been attorney for so probably 20 years before you were
every bit of that.
So you had a pretty good track record when Mary Pat Zitter.
Right.
Now, does the judge ask somebody to be that, or does bar association or somebody have to get together
normally
put
the
somebody
judge,
together?
Yeah, the judge asks somebody that they can
that they know they can trust.
They know they can trust and
they
can
get along
work
with
and they can get along with and that's reliable and that kind of has. Can assume their philosophy as well, because it's still the judge who determines, here's the philosophy of the court. You know, here's how I'd like things done. And so you can't be a wild card and go off on your own tangent and start something else with decisions.
And with being the neighbor to Mary Pat and being in the same sort of, I guess you'd call it business, she kind of probably knew you pretty well.
I think
and,
so.
And knew exactly who she was getting to,
right.
for the magistrate. So that's great. That's... well, let's take another break here. Well, we got about 10 minutes left. We'll come back and maybe hit a couple other things and then let you kind of do a an overall, here's why you should vote for me.
Okay.
We'll let you go home.
All right.
After a long day. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Fors Welding and Steel in Fort Recovery has 35 years of business experience with over 150 years of welding experience. From lawnmowers to semis, bring it to Fors, where Steve can send a mobile rig to you. If it can be welded, Fors Welding and Steel can do it. Need something made and fabricated? It's their specialty. Call Renee today at 419-375-4087. Fors Welding and Steel, 2 miles north of Fort Recovery on State Route 49, or call Steve for a quick quote at 419-375-4087.
If you're like me, then finding a job that fits your timeline is vital for you to be able to work at all. Cooper Farms lets me set my own schedule so that I can work when I have the time to. No one should have to choose between their family and their career. Thanks to Cooper Farms, you don't have to. With locations Van Wert, Paulding, Mercer County, and beyond, Cooper Farms has the flexibility and competitive pay I needed to work without sacrificing time with my family. Visit CooperFarmsJobs.com to find your new job today. Cooper Farms, more than a workplace.
Hi, this is Chad Guggenbiller with CSG Consulting, Finance, and Brokerage in Fort Recovery. Are you in the process of buying, starting, or selling a business, or maybe just trying to get more bang for your buck out of your current operation? Well, those are things I'm here to help with. I have 26 years of experience as a banker, CFO, and business owner. I've helped clients in all industries in areas such as financing, budgeting, staffing, and other areas like succession planning and project management. One of the biggest challenges I had as an entrepreneur was finding someone experienced to confide, share ideas, ask questions, and ultimately put the best plan together in a truly confidential way. These are things I valued and now want to pay forward for your operation. Come see me today for a financial plan and wellness review. It's nice to have someone on your side because as a business owner, I know it's never easy out there, and especially now. See me, Chad Guggenbiller, today at 419-852-4049 and have yourself a great day.
The Friends of the Library will be having a used book sale at the library the week of Monday, April 18th through Saturday, April 23rd during normal library hours. Here's your chance to get a bargain on a nice selection of used books, audiobooks, and DVDs. Proceeds from the sale will be used to purchase materials and equipment for the library. Be sure to stop by and check out the bargains anytime the week of April 18th through the 23rd at your library during their used book sale.
Welcome back to Insight. We're talking to Donna Post. She is one of the Republican candidates for the Mercer County Common Pleas Court Judge. And we've talked a little bit about your career. You've attorney for a number of years, and you were the magistrate for Mary Pat Zitter's court. And so being around Mercer County for 35 years in law, What's changed? Have you seen many changes, a lot of changes in things that come up? Is it kind of the same old all the time? Is there things that are completely different, a little different?
Well, I think some of the things that have changed involve technology. You know, we used to have, for example, what I would call cattle call days, which I never liked, which is a lot of people coming for whether it's civil or it's criminal all at the same time, it seemed like, which kind of makes tempers flare and makes people feel like they're not getting, you know, their proper time in the court and so forth because their attorneys have to run from one person to the next, or, you know, they only get so many minutes in the court, and or they have to tell their problems in front of everybody. And they just don't want to do that. So I remember as magistrate of the probate juvenile court, that judge and I talked over that, and we were able to do things in a better manner as far as give people perhaps not an hour, but maybe a half an hour, maybe 15 minutes, maybe something, but time by themselves in the courtroom so not everybody could hear all their problems, so that they wouldn't be judged by the public.
Right,
and
because
a lot of those people they know.
Yeah, especially if you think you're innocent. Everybody hear all this stuff you're accused of.
You don't want to, yeah.
Because you just, well, I've heard people that, trying to get out of jury duty say, well, if he wasn't guilty, they wouldn't accuse him.
And
that is kind of the public mentality.
Right.
You know, there's something there.
What a way to look
at it.
But
sometimes there isn't.
Right.
Sometimes it's completely made up.
Exactly. So that was part of it that I've seen change, that's more of an individual case call now on the dockets, whether it's in the common pleas court or the other courts.
Now, does that take a lot longer time, a little longer time, about the same amount of time?
It takes about the same amount of time. It's just that you have to jostle people back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the issue with the COVID and whatnot that we had, you couldn't have everybody in the courtroom anyway.
Yeah.
So you had to, you know, take a little bit more time and divide it into little blocks of time. And everybody seemed to get their time, and they seemed to be much more satisfied with that.
Well, that's
so
good.
So that helps
that's
a lot.
Really good.
Some of the other things that have changed do involve technology, in the fact that we're able to see inmates from the jail as opposed to having them to be transported for each and every case.
Mm-hmm.
Some cases they can be transported for to the courtroom, but that means that instead of having 30 or 60 people in the courtroom, plus all their family members, plus all the people who just want to come and look and see that day, the courtroom's pretty sparsely populated with basically the attorneys and the people who have to be there in order to make sure that that person gets representation. They can appear simply by TV, by the video, and everything can get taken care of.
Now, does that have to still be in the courtroom? Does the judge have to be in the courtroom for
absolutely.
The TV thing?
Yes.
Okay, so he couldn't do it from his chambers or...
Possibly he could, but certainly that's something that you need to have the attorneys there for, and you need space, so that's pretty much why that stays in the courtroom.
Okay, so the attorneys would be there.
Right.
But okay, that makes sense.
Yep. Right, so it's simply a court hearing, but that one person who was out at the jail doesn't need to be transported in, but you still need everything to be recorded, court to be called in by the bailiff and so forth. But it does give us some other options, and I think it also increases the safety of everybody who's there and increases the mobility of getting people in and out so that way things can move a little faster. But some of the other things I've noticed over the years is we have more female members of the Bar Association, and I think it kind of better reflects our population and the women who have went to law school, and they're coming back home. So when I started, there were two, and then there were three for many years, and everybody else, you know, was one of the guys. So
how many members of the Bar Association in Mercer County are there? A dozen or 20 or 50 or six?
It's over 20. It's about 25 who are active in the court, and probably half of those are women.
That's great.
So that just kind of reflects actually what the cities had seen for a long time and other parts of the country, and Mercer County, of course, reflects what's going on.
Yeah, I think there have been a number of young ladies from this area that have gone to be lawyers, but most of the time they don't come back here because of various reasons, maybe because their spouse was somewhere else with a high-paying job that they couldn't leave, or maybe they just didn't feel like that they could be part of the club, I guess you'd call it, being a woman. So they stayed somewhere else.
Right.
And now, with over half, that means they've figured out that they're very welcome around here, and people trust them, or they wouldn't have any clients if people didn't trust them. So that's a great thing that's
right. It's great being they can done come back now. Here and work here, and yes. you can live here and raise your family here and yeah. take advantage of the same things that you yeah. had when you were a kid
and make a difference in the county.
Exactly,
and that's a huge thing. So, are there any particular people? Locally, nationally, that you feel like was a role model for you?
You know, I would just rely back on my family. I mean, they're just rock solid. You know, we were yep. farmers for years, and that's, you know, my great-grandpa came from Germany. He came over, and then his dad, my dad, my brothers, who all stuck together and carried on the family tradition with farming. Now it's passed to the fifth generation, which would be, you know, my nieces, nephews, and my son. It was almost unheard of, I think, when we first started, probably in our family, that it was mostly the men who farmed, and now mm-hmm. it's, you know, the next generation has come up, and we've got just as many of the women farming as the young men. So that's kind of nice. We'll be able to continue with that. And I think that is also goes into law and everything else that we have in this county, that people are saying, hey, my daughter can do this. You know, my wife right. can do this, whatever. Yeah. I mean, businesses don't have to fail just because the gentleman has left, you know, the earth. Their families can still take over. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we went into that next generation, certainly. For me, I think it's because I'm familiar with the county, because I was born and raised here. Educated here, basically determined with my common sense and whatnot that you gain as you get a little older. Really, my motto is of the people and for the people. I don't have to Google something when I hear something has happened or where it is or the name or something like that. You recognize mm-hmm. it because you've grown up here.
Right. Yeah. So anything you want to throw in? Why do you think the voters in Mercer County should vote for you as the Come and Please judge?
All right. I believe that I have the skill set that we need in order to promote that particular position. I think I would make a great judge as far as that. I consider everybody. I'm respectful, as well as I've dealt with a lot of these areas over the years, not only criminal but civil, family law. I deal, being the youngest of seven children, I also deal with resolving things. And it seems to be a strong point with me. And to be, as my daughter says, pretty decisive about things. She has always said, sometimes I want to go do something, but I think, oh, Mom, I know what she's going to say. And my son as well. You know, so it's just part of, I think, as you grow up and you're part of a family and you're part of the community, mm-hmm. That you have something to give back. And I think at this point I have an opportunity to give back my time to the community and make it stronger. We're still coming up and celebrating the 100-year anniversary of the courthouse, and yep. I think that it's because of people who have worked so hard with the court system mm-hmm. that we have a good reputation in this county, and I'd like to keep it.
I think later on in the year, maybe late this spring or maybe in the fall, we're going to have Aaron Miner, who's one of the people in charge of on the committee for the celebration of the 100. Kind right. of her on and talk a lot about what's going on with that. And I think it's, you know, that courthouse is beautiful. It's well taken care of. It's too small, like every courthouse. So they have offices all over town.
Gorgeous marble that yes, they have always maintained, yeah, and nothing has gone unrepaired.
Yeah, it is impressive to walk into that building, and giant kudos to the people 100 years ago and probably 110 years ago starting to plan it to make sure that it was something that they would not have to constantly do this, do that, fix this, fix that. Everything was done the right way. Of course, adding electricity and this, that, and the other thing. There's probably electricity then, but all kinds of things like that. That nobody had thought of back then, internet lines, phone lines, that kind of thing. So, you know, those things are important too, but the main thing is that main building itself is so impressive, solid, well-maintained. Everything has been taken care of on that, and it's something I think we're really proud of. Now we're talking about the courthouse instead of the courts.
And now you look, too, out there have the, talking about the courts and the courthouse, now the elevator is currently being refurbished, so they've taken that out, and they're putting in a new one with the funds that they've got from, I think, through the COVID money, mm-hmm. I guess is what they call it.
Yeah.
But they're still able, that if somebody can't make it up the steps, they're willing to accommodate them by having court downstairs. They have a mobile mm-hmm. unit in order to, you know, record things and mm-hmm. so forth. So they're able to accommodate people and keep justice access to everybody.
Right. That's very important. That's awesome. So, I want to say good luck on the campaign trail coming
up
in, was that 2 weeks from yesterday?
Right.
I believe.
3rd.
So,
yes.
It is okay to vote early.
Yes,
and,
it is.
But not often, just once. If you haven't registered already, it is too late for this one, but the state things, when and if they ever decide when they're going to allow those state legislators to be
right, for the maps
figured
to
out.
Be with yeah. yes, redrawn and so
you'll
forth,
have yeah. time to get registered, but you can vote live or in person at the courthouse. You can request a ballot that you can do at home. There's all kinds of things you can do. I always vote on election day, but that's
nice
just
tradition.
That's my
yeah.
tradition, and I go early and try to claim that I'm somebody else, and everybody laughs at me. And so we'll just make sure everybody gets out and votes on all the issues. We're going to have Sheriff Jeff Gray and Jason Menchofer, we hope, next week to talk about their issues. And I forgot to mention at the very beginning of this that we did have Mr. Menchofer set up to be on tonight, and I was thinking it was going to be the second last week before the election, and I thought we had one more week, so Ms. Post here to come in, and then heard from Mr. Menchofer today. Am I still on for tonight? And I thought, okay, I messed that up. So my apologies to him, but he will be on next week. And Sheriff Jeff Gray, we're working on getting him. Haven't heard back from him yet to confirm, but we had talked earlier that he was going to come on to talk about his levy issue too. So again, get out and vote. And Donna Post is one of the candidates for the judge. Anything else you want to throw in there?
Well, thank you for having me this evening.
We're glad to have you on, and we always try to have as many candidates on as we possibly can. This year, I think we got just about everybody that isn't unopposed. So we thank everybody for listening. We'll be back in just a little bit with Sports Talk with Bubba and Fee.
Thank you for staying tuned to Insight with Mr. Jack Stogler, right here on the Fort Recovery Internet Radio. This show was being brought to you in part by those community-minded sponsors you heard during the show. Thank you.